You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Speechless. James Harden just tied his personal career high and Rockets franchise high with 61 points, except the last time he did this and what should certainly be his second consecutive MVP season, it was against the New York Knicks in January, which the Rockets needed every drop to survive against a bad Knicks team, in large part because of the wave of injuries they had going on at that moment. Tonight, on Friday, March 22nd, it was against Greg Popovich and the San Antonio Spurs, a squad that entered having won 9 of their past 10, ranked 4th in the NBA in defense over those last 10 games, one that at 42-30 entering the game was only 3 games back and would have been within 2 with a victory tonight of the Rockets, and after trailing by 19 in the second half, had flipped it to a 6-point lead, a 25-point turnaround in the second half from Houston's direction to San Antonio. Everything going against the Rockets, the Spurs, the best coach, defensive tactician that the game has ever seen, all of the headwinds against the Rockets, and it did not matter because they have James Harden. Again, speechless. There are no words for what this guy is doing and what, again, should be clearly his second consecutive Most Valuable Player campaign. With that, welcome into a happy, joyous post-game episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Friday evening, it's our second episode of the day. I said when we talked in the morning, our roundtable chat weekend review with Karthik Prasad, that I planned on doing this show recapping Rockets Spurs Saturday morning unless something crazy happened to warrant an immediate show. Well, yeah, something crazy did happen. James Harden tying his personal career high and Rockets franchise high with 61 points, plus 18 in his 37 minutes, leading the Rockets to a 111-105 win over the Spurs. It's their 13th in the last 15 games, and all against a Spurs squad that entered having won 9 of their past 10. Houston improves to 46-27 on the season. The Spurs drop to 42-31. This win also secures the season series for the Rockets against their I-10 rivals 3-1, which in the event these two teams end up tied, which hopefully after tonight is not something Houston has to be concerned about because there's a 4-game gap and only 9 games to play, something would have to go dramatically wrong for that to come into play. That said, it's certainly possible Houston could play San Antonio in the playoffs, and to be able, with so many other things going wrong, to get this type of victory, yeah, it feels really, really good if you are a Houston Rockets fan. This is a big one because the schedule is going to get a lot more difficult starting next week. You have New Orleans on Sunday on the road, which is a bit of a breather, but it's on the road. No road game is easy. And then Milwaukee, Denver, a back-to-back with the Clippers, or with the Kings, and then the Clippers on night 2 of a road back-to-back. So yeah, after Sunday in New Orleans, the schedule is going to get more difficult. So this was a game in which the Rockets needed, especially after letting Wednesday's game against the Grizzlies slip away, and James Harden made sure that they got it. And when you look at his stat line, 61 points, which is ridiculous in and of itself, 7 boards, plus 18, the Rockets were in his 37 minutes, they were minus 12 in all others. What's particularly remarkable is that the Spurs had no answers. This is a Spurs squad, when you look at the caliber of defenders they have, Derek White, Bryn Forbes, it's a pretty talented and long stable of athletic wings that they have, and of course the coaching of Greg Popovich as a tactician, he is as good as it gets in the NBA, and so to see Harden succeed at every level, 19 of 34 overall, 9 of 13 from 3, 14 of 17 on free throws, got to the foul line 17 times again. I think the far and away biggest storyline is that he is healthy, because after seeing the tape that's been all over his neck, his wrist, what he's been going through on the bench was questionable earlier this week, and then you combine that with his subpar shooting numbers since the All-Star break, to see him go better than 50% from three in consecutive games. He was 9 of 17 against Memphis when he had 57 on Wednesday, nearly single-handedly bringing the Rockets back from an enormous deficit late in the fourth quarter, and then again in overtime. Tonight, 9 of 13, which is just obscene efficiency from three, including three straight three-pointers when the Rockets were down 100 to 94 with just under 4 minutes left. It's as close to single-handedly willing your team to a win as you will see. As far as James individually, I don't think any of us should doubt him, his abilities, his desire. By now, we have seen this for two straight years, the combination of not just the physical talents, which are immense, but the leadership, putting his team on his back when they need him most. I don't know if any of us are surprised about that. I think, if anything, what most stands out from this is the durability. The fact that despite all the injuries, we're now at back-to-back games in which between 57 on Wednesday and 61 on Friday, that's 118 points in two games. That's averaging 59 points per game. That's ridiculous on better than 50% shooting from three, but he was also 10 of 21 from inside the arc. He had two late floaters after he made the three three-pointers. The Spurs were closing out on that, so he had to drive. And he had one floater and then another, a post move. Somehow he banked in a shot from the mid-range from about 14 feet away. Just stupendous what he is able to pull off. And also got to the free throw line 17 times. He took a lot of contact because the Rockets needed him. Almost no one else was shooting well in this game. I suppose Chris Paul ended up with 18 points, 5 assists, 7 of 15 shooting. But you go up and down the roster, Eric Gordon 4 of 13, PJ Tucker 0 of 3, Clint Capella 3 of 8. He was getting denied at the rim. Daniel House had 1 point, 0 of 4 off the bench. Iman Shumpert 1 of 4. There was no one that did much of anything outside of James Harden on this Rockets roster tonight against a San Antonio Spurs squad that is incredibly well coached, extremely incentivized to win the game because they were part of a four-team tie heading into tonight for the 5 through 8 spots in the Western Conference. They were hot, having won 9 of their past 10. They had every incentive to go all out. And on top of it all, James Harden, we know what he's been dealing with in terms of his neck, his wrist, the injuries. He went in having been asked to do so much on Wednesday, and yet it was a loss. And one of the things I said after it ended was, is there a cost to giving so much to James Harden, increasing his workload to the degree they did, and then not even getting the result? Because then now you've got another game 48 hours later against an even better team in San Antonio. Well, just as he's done all season long, just when it seems like you're asking too much of James Harden, somehow you aren't. This is one of the most ridiculous stretches of basketball, seasons of basketball at this point, because we're through 73 games, that I have ever seen. It is that good. Better than 50% from the field, better than 50% from three, got to the free throw line 17 times, had 7 rebounds, which helped the Rockets get to parity with the Spurs in the glass, 48-48. The Rockets weren't especially hot outside of Harden, as mentioned, so they really had to grind, and James Harden found enough energy and legs to help out on that end as well. Just incredible what he's able to do. Of course, we know his strengths as an isolation player, the step backs, the drives, the floater game, which makes him, at this point, just unguardable. 2 years ago against this same Spurs team, now they don't have Pau Gasol anymore. They do still have LaMarcus Aldridge, but we know the drop, the big strategy that they employed on him in the 2017 playoffs when his floater was not a strength. Well, now it's gone from a weakness to just clearly a strength. It's remarkable how quickly that has come around for him, and at 29 years old, he still keeps getting better. All in all, though, we have seen the technical things, the improvement he's made basketball-wise all season long. What is really impressive at this point is just the physical and mental durability, the stamina physically, despite everything he's been asked, the injuries, everything that he's been suffered through, the fact that he can still dig deep and find this level of play when nothing else is going right for the Rockets. It just speaks to the conditioning that he has put his body in the right frame of mind and even, or the right frame and state entering the home stretch of the season and now just a couple of weeks away from the playoffs. And beyond that, mentally, to have the toughness when everything is going against you to, after scoring 27 in the first quarter, the most in any quarter against Greg Popovich in his entire career, 37 in the first half, it would have been so easy to sulk and say, this isn't our night. There was a stretch in the fourth quarter where Daniel House had just an absurd, stupid turnover reminiscent of what he did late in the game against the Grizzlies on Wednesday. That put the Rockets down 6 with under 4 to play, and it would have been so easy to say, this isn't our night, nothing is going our way. And on top of all the physical gifts, of course, he's put his body, as mentioned, in the right state to where somehow this enormous workload doesn't faze him. The injuries, he's managed that well over the past month to his wrist and his neck. Beyond all that, the mental strength, when everything is going wrong, to dig deep and then score 13 unanswered, 3 straight threes, and then a mid-range shot, I don't even know how to describe it, basically a post move in which he put his back to the basket, then turned around and went glass from about 12 to 14 feet. It is stunning how well-rounded his game is, and on top of all his gifts, which we've seen all season long, the mental side of the game to not quit, all against a coach and a franchise, the Spurs, which over his NBA career has somewhat been his kryptonite. Now, again, he's gotten a lot better against them the last 2 years. They won the series last year in the regular season. This year, they're 3-1. So even the one franchise that has given him trouble over his NBA career, he has somehow mastered that as well. It is absurd what he's doing. It wasn't a perfect game for the Rockets. They have lots of things they need to clean up in terms of their shooting. They're still trying to figure out their rotations. This was not a perfect win. But when it comes to the grand scheme, this is a quality Spurs team that was extremely incentivized. This is a quality win for the Rockets, especially given the headwinds, what happened on Wednesday. Then staring down, it would have been a gut punch of a loss, leading by 19 in the second half and then overcoming it. It shows you what this team collectively, but especially James Harden individually, is made of internally. And that's what makes you believe that as you get to the playoffs, yeah, you're going to face adversity. You're going to be playing good teams night after night. But when it really matters, when it's winning time in those games, there is no one else that can do what James Harden does. He is that damn special. What a night. 3 letters sum it up. MVP. Now, continuing our way through our recap of the 111-105 win the Rockets posted over the Spurs on Friday night. It improves Houston to 46-27, drops the Spurs to 42-31, giving 4 games of separation, only 9 left to play. Keeps Houston tied in the loss column, but still a half game up on the Portland Trailblazers for the number 3 spot in the Western Conference standings. More importantly, though, it gives them a lead of at least 3 games in the loss column for home court advantage in the first round, which at this point is, I think, the biggest priority. The reason number 3, and if you want more on this, check out our earlier Friday episode with Karthik Prasad. The reason the number 3 was such a big priority a couple of weeks ago was because it looked like Golden State at number 1 was a formality, and that Oklahoma City, somewhere in the 4-5 line, would be there. So considering the team you would play would be much more difficult, potentially Oklahoma City in round 1 and then Golden State waiting in round 2, then the 3 seed had a much higher priority. At this point, considering Denver's only a half game back of the Warriors for the 1, and the Thunder continue to tumble down the standings, although they did have an impressive win against the Raptors tonight, so let's not bury them just yet. The point is that it's a lot murkier. You definitely want home court advantage in the first round. I think we can all agree on that. But as far as the 3 or the 4, yeah, there are certain scenarios where I might want the 4 more than the 3 if, say, Denver is the 1 and or the 5 is not Oklahoma City, whereas the 6 conceivably could be. So there's a lot still to watch. Realistically, of course, you want the Rockets to continue winning, so it's all within their control. Right now, they're half game up on the Blazers, and in the loss column, they're tied. Portland, because they won 2 of the 3 meetings, they only played 3 times this year, they're in position to get the tiebreaker. But first off, there's a lot of basketball left, and secondly, it's not even clear if that's exactly what you want, the 3 seed, at this particular time. As far as tonight's game, which definitely is pretty big because Sunday in New Orleans, I know it's a road game, but you should be a favorite. Considering you have that difficult 5-game stretch, the Bucks, the Nuggets, a home-and-home with the Kings, and then the Clippers on night 2 of a road back-to-back, you want to bank as many wins as you can. And the reason this one is big, if you had lost this one, you would have been within 2 games of a lot of teams in the loss column, including the Spurs, of potentially falling out of home court advantage, the top 4 in the first round. Now you have a 3-game lead in the loss column with only 9 to play. That puts you in a pretty good spot. And then as far as whether you want the number 3, the number 4, we can pick that up at a later date. Of course, the biggest reason the Rockets were able to get this win tonight, the ridiculous 61 points, 7 rebounds, also had 3 steals. His defense was commendable, I thought, especially in the post, jumped a couple of passes when it mattered. James Harden, just ridiculous what this MVP, this absurd basketball player, continues to do. Outside of Harden, not a lot went right. I mentioned he went 9 of 13 from 3. The Rockets overall were 14 of 37. They had entered, I believe, three straight games shooting above 40% from 3. Tonight they fell below that, slightly below 40%, even with Harden shooting just a stupid 9 of 13, and that's because outside of James, yeah, they were just 5 of 24, which is barely better than 20%. Chris Paul had a nice game overall, 18 points, 5 assists, did make some clutch free throws in the last minute, but he was 0 of 3 from behind the arc. PJ Tucker was 0 of 3, Eric Gordon 3 of 9 after getting his rest day on Wednesday. Daniel House 0 of 4, just 1 point. I thought this was by far his worst game since coming back to the Rockets, minus 5, which was the worst of anyone in the plus-minus on the entire Rockets squad. He's had a propensity for ill-timed turnovers. Gerald Green did make his 1-3, and it was a timely one early in the fourth quarter. Iman Shumpert just 1 of 4. He had some hard luck. A couple of those missed threes went all the way down and out. Point is, the Rockets did not shoot well as a team. They couldn't do much outside of James Harden, and Harden rescued them offensively. Defensively, it wasn't all Harden. Now, he made a couple of big plays, but as we transition our second segment of our usual 3 points recap, the other guys that we need to draw attention to, in my opinion, are PJ Tucker and Clint Capella. Down the stretch of that game, PJ did not score tonight, but his plus 12 was second to Harden on the entire Rockets roster, and he locked up DeMar DeRozan down the stretch. What should be noted is that when the Rockets were down 100-94 with 4 minutes left in the game, of course Harden scored 13 in a row by himself, but until 30 seconds were left and the Rockets were up by 7 and the game was basically over, the Spurs scored just 2. By and large, they were the bigger team tonight. They got things going in the second half. They made a lot of tough looks, and then when it mattered, DeRozan, Aldridge, they each, at various points of the game, got going. But in winning time, yeah, Tucker had DeRozan fall to 7 of 19 overall, 16, 8, and 8. Overall, it was a quality game for him. But when it mattered, again, just 2 points for San Antonio from the 4-minute mark where they went up 6 to 30 seconds left when they were down by 7. The game was practically over, and then they hit a 3 that was largely for cosmetic purposes. It was tremendous Houston defense. A lot of it was PJ Tucker one-on-one with DeMar DeRozan. The Spurs are a team, you look at the guys that they play on a regular basis. LaMarcus Aldridge is a big, in terms of the perimeter guys, White, Forbes, DeRozan, Bellinelli, Bertans, whoever it may be, DeRozan is the guy that has to create the offense. And as mentioned, he had, on top of his 16 points, 8 assists. They put a lot of emphasis on him as a creator. So Tucker one-on-one, he had a couple of big steals late in the game, and even when he didn't get the steals, he was able to force tough shots, had 2 blocks in there, and the biggest block of the game, by the way, Clint Capella. Tucker did the lion's share of the work one-on-one, but then with a minute left in the game, when the Spurs actually were still hanging around in striking distance, the Harden, at least the threes, had cooled off. So with a minute left, there was definitely still time for Portland to land for San Antonio to land a counterpunch. When you look at games like this, when something Herculean happens like that, you often see that the team that has that kind of crazy run has something happen to where they run out of gas. The one bucket that DeRozan made was with 2:24 left. It cut it to 1. And then when Harden had his floater, put him up by 5 with a minute 25 left, that was when DeRozan got it back, and with under a minute left, Capella denied him, and Chris Paul went high to secure the board, and that was pretty much the ball game, with the Rockets having the ball up by 5 with less than a minute left. And the reason that I note that for Clint Capella, at the end of the day, yeah, it's just 1 block, and you'd like to have a little bit more from him. Overall, 7 points, 16 boards, 4 assists, the 1 block. What stood out to me most about Capella was that it was a game in which the old Clint Capella might check out. And it's a similar theme to what I said with James. Not that you would ever expect James to check out. He was always playing well, 27 in the first quarter. But when so many things are against you, then at some point, especially against a team that's such a well-oiled machine the way the Spurs are, it can become easy to say, this is not our night. And of course, James individually did not say that. That's great. For Clint in year 5, someone that's still in his mid-20s age-wise, and You think back a couple of years ago, that playoff series against the Thunder, that's not even 2 years old, and which basically the Rockets had to lean on a then 34-year-old Nene to carry the load because Capella basically got punked by Steven Adams and was not able to respond. We've seen him grow since then. In this particular game, he was 3 of 8 overall shooting, and of his 5 misses, 3 of them came right at the rim. It was a game in which it reminded you why we picked on him of late. Boogie Cousins, DeAndre Ayton, Jonas Valanciunas on Wednesday. He has not been tough enough at the rim of late. And I'm not going to say just because he had the big block in the last minute, although he did have 16 boards, and that was a big part of how the Rockets tied San Antonio on the glass, a bigger team, 48-48, which of course is a big difference from being minus 12 on Wednesday. Also give credit to PJ, even though he didn't score. He had a couple of big blocks, as mentioned, and had 10 rebounds. So of your 48 boards, 26 just between Tucker and Capella. They played their butts off. With Clint in particular, though, he's a guy over his career. I won't say that he's soft. That's an extreme overstatement, because we have seen games like Christmas against Steven Adams this year, when he had 29 and 21 in the win in Oakland in early January, in which he has been incredibly tough. So it would be very reactionary to look at a week or two of spotty, inconsistent play, especially coming off a stretch in which he didn't play basketball for 6 weeks with thumb surgery, and then act like that he's an untrustworthy guy. There are going to be ebbs and flows to anyone over a season. What you want to see is that, especially heading into the playoffs, things are not going to go your way sometimes, so you want to see that a guy is capable of turning it on a dime. I talked about that with James Harden, but it's even more valuable in the role players. Because with James, of course, he's the MVP. You're paying him to play through no matter what BS happens. With the role players, which Clint Capella is, it's not always that easy, especially if he's still relatively young, which he is. So to see him get rejected at the rim 3 times, everybody's talking about how the Spurs, myself included, on Twitter, were having way too much success at the rim, the rebounds were an issue again, yada yada, to then play just on the floor, period. It speaks volumes that Mike D'Antoni trusted Capella to be a part of the closing lineup, even things weren't going all that well. And then to step up in the final minute of that game with that block, without fouling, to me, it's a great sign and testament to Clint's emotional maturity, which, even though his game has still rounded into form to where we're counting on him this year as kind of a 17 and 13 type player by average, mentally, he's still getting better. That's the one side, aside from the obvious technique things. Talk about that with Harden. Even at 29 years old, he's getting better. Well, Capella, in his mid-20s. That's the one side of his game he's still trying to shore up. And even on a night that he scored just 7 points, a lot of things weren't going his way. I really like the mental makeup we saw from Clint Capella. The same goes for PJ Tucker, who had no points. And despite that, as mentioned, was just a beast down the stretch against DeMar DeRozan, one-on-one defense. But PJ's 33. We've come to expect that from him. He's one of the most hard-nosed guys in the league. Capella, we know what his athletic gifts are, but we wonder, what is he made of when the chips are down and when times are tough? Well, tonight, a game in which he wasn't that great overall. I'm not going to say he's past this tough stretch because there were some alarming things, but you can make up for a lot of spotty play if you close well. And that's what Clint Capella did. He stood tall. He was tough when it mattered. So the Rockets, outside of James Harden, there wasn't a lot that went right for individuals, at least on the offensive end. Defensively, though, when it mattered, PJ Tucker and Clint Capella showed you why this team still believes that when the chips are down, when the games are really meaningful, they can be a quality defensive team. It was just a 4-minute closing stretch, but when it mattered, PJ Tucker, Clint Capella, and even James Harden, yeah, the Rockets stepped up defensively. Let's throw Chris Paul in that mix as well. He's been enormous for the Rockets, their transition defense, shoring that up. This Houston squad, allowing the Spurs 105 points, it was a bit of a mixed bag. They did allow 34 in the third. When it mattered, though, again, that's a common phrase I keep saying in this podcast, they stepped it up and they showed you a reason to believe. And remember, to get this show every day, please subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and their new features. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. Final thoughts as we close out Friday evening's recap of the 111-105, just stupendous come-from-behind victory the Rockets had over the Spurs, led by 19 early in the second half, but they trailed by 6 when there were 4 minutes to go. James Harden, a personal 13-0 run, scored 61, which ties his career high and the Rockets' franchise high. he's the MVP, plus 18 in his 37 minutes, minus 12. The Rockets were in the 11 he didn't play. Just ridiculous what he does. Even the Rockets' defensive effort, not bad, limiting the Spurs to 105. Houston at 46 and 27. They're four games better, but certainly not far and away superior to the Spurs, who are 42 and 31. It's a good team that entered winning 9 of 10, limiting them to 105 points. It's not a bad outing, but limiting them to 24 in the fourth quarter and holding them to just 2 points between the four-minute mark and about 30 seconds left in the game. Yeah, the Rockets clamped down defensively when it mattered. So in our normal 3 points recap, those were our first two segments. Closing out the show, there's not a whole lot individually in terms of players who flash, because outside of maybe Chris Paul, and you exclude his threes, in which he was 0 of 3, no one outside of James Harden shot that well. So that's why Harden had to score 61 points. It was still close. It was a game in which so many guys were cold. Even Eric Gordon, who's been strong in March, had 12 points. He was just 4 of 13 shooting, 3 of 9 from 3, missed some open looks. Daniel House Jr. had just 1 point, 0 of 4 from 3. Perhaps the moment was a bit too big for him, and we saw why it matters to consistently play basketball and not take 2 months off at the NBA level. It's not like you can just step back in and then be seamless without any sort of decline in production, or at least consistency, relative to when you were playing every single night. So the third and final segment, what's interesting to me about this game is that we saw who was not playing. Because this was a game everyone was active. Kenneth Faried, he was out Wednesday with a sore knee. Mike D'Antoni told us going in on Friday that he was available, and he did not play. Neither did Austin Rivers. Do I think this is especially telling? Not so much, because I think when you look at this Rockets rotation, we need to be clear. The five starters off the bench, House, Nene, Green, Shumpert, Faried, and Rivers. The Rockets have 11 potentially rotation-caliber players. They're not going to play 11 players in any game, let alone the playoffs. It's, in a Mike D'Antoni scheme, 9 at the most. And really, that'd be unfair to say that's just a Mike D'Antoni scheme. That's really about any coach in the NBA. So if everyone is available, then you're going to have to make some hard decisions. Tonight, I think this may have been a game. Nene's got a planned maintenance schedule that this was one in which they wanted to play him anyway. So I don't know if I read that much into Nene over Faried, because with Nene, his schedule's fairly regimented, so this could have been mapped out a while ago. With Rivers not playing, it seems pretty clear that Rivers, his minutes instead went to Iman Shumpert. Because at this point, now House did not play well tonight, but House has been so great since coming back, I don't think they're going to start giving House DNP CDs based on one off night. I think you're looking at Shumpert, Green, and Rivers, if everyone is healthy, for one spot at the end of the bench, or for two spots, excuse me, I should say. Shumpert, Green, and Rivers. And Shumpert and Austin, there is some overlap in their role. Rivers can create his own offense a bit more, but in terms of being a perimeter stopper defensively, then they both can do some of the same things. So my guess tonight was that Shumpert, there's less tape on him for the Rockets this year, especially because since they got him in early February and then they had the injury issues, they wanted to get more data points on him. But he's not quite the same as a ball handler as Rivers. And it's also worth noting, this was a game in which for long stretches, it felt like the Rockets could not deny triple penetration. So if Shumpert was cold, and he was 1 of 4 from 3, now he was a bit unlucky, a couple of those threes popped out, but they all largely came in the first half. I still think Houston's trying to figure out exactly how they can use Shumpert. They're trying to get more data. This might, could have been a game in which you use both Rivers and Shumpert if this were the playoffs. Because while Gerald did make his 1-3, he's not exactly a plus on the defensive end of the floor. House, I would say, was spotty, had the worst plus-minus on the team. And, of course, some of it, the turnovers, the missed shots on offense had a lot to do with that. Defensively, while individually he's good, his rotations have not been especially crisp since coming back. I think a lot of that has to do with the mental rust all that time off. In terms of Faried versus Nene, I think that is largely just a combination right now of Nene's ongoing maintenance plan and does the matchup make you go bigger or smaller? And come the playoffs, I think it's just going to be, do you want Nene's brute size and physicality, or do you want the leaping ability and vertical spacing of Faried for those 12 to 14 minutes off the bench? You know what the strengths and weaknesses of each are, Nay, in terms of lack of flexibility, Fareed in terms of his subpar defense, although he can't help you rebounding-wise. In terms of the perimeter, to me, Green, Shumpert, and Rivers, those are the three spots that you're only going to have two of them at most playing in the playoffs. I don't know that it's telling that Rivers didn't play tonight. I think a lot of it had to do with the Rockets. If there's any doubt, they want to err on the side of playing Shumpert because they had such little tape on him. They want to know what they have. I do, however, think for long stretches of the game, including the 34 in the third quarter, the Rockets missed the ability of Austin Rivers as a perimeter stopper. I'm not necessarily saying he has to play over Iman Shumpert. He could have instead played over Gerald Green. But there were some dribble penetration issues tonight. So as far as the results, I'm not going to say it's clear that, oh, Rivers and Fareed deserve to play over Nene and Shumpert or Nene and Green or whatever two you want to throw out there. It's not as simple as that. These are 11 rotation quality players. Each is going to have nights where they're good, like House had earlier this week in Atlanta, and they're going to have nights where they're bad, like House tonight against San Antonio. It comes and goes for role players in the NBA. All you're trying to do going into the playoffs is make sure you have the best handle that you do on how they're playing, how they're peaking, and of course, what matchups they are each best suited for. So tonight, as far as the results, I would say overall it was mixed. Some of your role players that play, they definitely need to make more shots. Everyone outside of Harden needed to do that tonight. As far as the individuals beyond that, I will say it was a game in which there were stretches that I missed Austin Rivers. Does that mean you need to double up on defense between Rivers and Shumpert? Or do you just have Rivers, who's a bit more flexible than Shumpert is, and also a guy who at least in his Rockets career has been a better three-point shooter than Iman? I don't know. I think it's something that's still worthy of experimentation over the last nine games. But I do think you could see why Austin Rivers, especially against really good and well-coached teams, disciplined, which the Spurs are, it's an issue for the Rockets, especially with James Harden, Chris Paul being asked to do so much, and of course the mileage after now having played 73 games in the regular season. These are the dog days of the NBA calendar. Then they might be able to do some heavy lifting offensively. Defensively, it's kind of ridiculous to expect them to stay right in front of their guy every single possession. That's where you need scrappers like Shumpert, like Rivers, and who knows, during the stretch of the year, you might need both of those guys. Because Shumpert tonight was the only guy that I could really trust, I felt like, to stay right in front of his guy defensively, but did not contribute enough offensively to stay on the floor for all that long. Potentially, that's where Rivers has a role. Nene versus Fareed, that's a bit more mixed, and I think we need more data points on Fareed. He had such a good start in Houston. Lately, it's been a lot more mixed, but he's also had the injuries. Hopefully, Sunday against New Orleans, a team that is less, I would say, disciplined. The Spurs are a team with their passing and their coaching that might take advantage of Fareed's deficiencies, especially when you combine his normal deficiencies with mental rust from having the injuries, not having played all that much of late. Hopefully, Sunday against the Pelicans, on paper at least, that feels like a good matchup to let Fareed, his energy, his balance, get back into flow. And then at that point, we can judge how he's playing, how he's feeling, and then down the home stretch of the year, try and figure out which matchups are best for Fareed and which are best for Nene. Anyway, I think that's enough talk for today, Friday, March 22nd, because it's our second show of the day. We had our weekend review earlier. I thought we'd push back the Spurs recap until Saturday, but as usual, when you have a plan, James Harden has a way of changing that plan and leading the Rockets to a come-from-behind win, down 6 with 4 to go, and scoring 61 points, which ties his personal career high and Rockets franchise high. Yeah, that absolutely warranted an immediate post-game show. So, at this point, on Friday evening at 10 p.m., I will hopefully finally be signing off for the day. If you want more coverage before our next episode, which will be after Sunday night's game in New Orleans, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, don't forget our email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook account, facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Website, lockedonrockets.com. Always you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, pretty much anything we could do to make this a better podcast for you, the Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Don't hesitate to reach out and let me know, or just check out our prior content. Again, if you missed Friday's show because it's only been up for about 12 hours, then please check out our archives this weekend as well, because I thought we had a really nice roundtable Q&A, some bigger picture talk with my good buddy Karthik Prasad that is in our weekend review, our Friday earlier show. Also, beyond those channels, if you would be kind enough to remember to subscribe to the show, you can do so at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and also on our new Himalaya podcast app. And when you get in your car, Remember that you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets as well. You can do that at the gym or pretty much wherever you are. That's one of the benefits of being part of the Locked On Podcast Network and having all this great distribution. Once again, the happy final from Toyota Center Friday night. Rockets 111, Spurs 105. Houston improves to 46-27. It's the Rockets' 13th win in the last 15 games. Oh, and by the way, league MVP James Harden, he tied his personal career high and Rockets franchise high with 61, leading the Rockets back from a 6-point deficit with under 4 minutes to play, including a personal 13-0 run in that stanza. What a ridiculous player. What a hell of a run for the Rockets as a team. As always, how sweet it is. And thank you for coming along for the ride with me here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily discussion of Houston Rockets basketball.